Conduct better educational leadership evaluations in less time with Super Eval, the online rubric-based evaluation tool for superintendents, principals, and central office administrators. Better communication that leads to healthy, efficient leadership teams, only at supereval.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Reading student engagement. How students engage in learning production behaviors has a great impact on the learning outcomes for the students, the success of the students. Here's a model that I've been using with observers in classrooms. And those observers are sometimes administrators and instructional coaches, but often the observers are teachers going into each other's classrooms and just putting their focus on observing what students are doing. If you would, in your mind for me, create a continuum that starts on the left with the word fear or the phrase high anxiety. Then moving to the right, an area that we would call attention, and further to the right, an area that we would call comfort, and then all the way at the other end of the continuum, an area that we'd call bored. So I'd like you to think about your group of students, the grade level that you're working with. If you're a school leader and you're in a building that has a spread of grade levels, think about what these things look like and sound like at different grade levels. So what does it look like when kids are bored? And then how would you describe kids who are above bored, but they're very comfortable? And then how does it change when kids move from comfort to what you might call a more focused attention? And then when I push it all the way to the left and I hit that spot of fear or high anxiety, what does that look like or sound like? Now, the thing to recognize here as we begin to describe this is the two ends of the continuum are where learning won't happen. So if I'm up at that fear or high anxiety, the brain is likely to kick into a fight or flight process, and the learning is shut down. And interestingly enough, if I go all the way to the other end, bored does the same thing. It's like the brain has a built-in mechanism to protect you from being bored. So as you start to feel bored, your mind will go somewhere else to protect you. So if the speaker is boring, you've started working on the grocery list, which is no different than the young child who picks up his pencil and turns it into a plane and is flying it. They are escaping boredom. Now, those of you who work with young elementary kids, the joy of kindergarten students is that it's really easy to spot where they are on this continuum. I know my first work with kindergarten kids, how do I know they're at fear? They're crying. It's real obvious. I had a principal explain to me, you can tell when kindergarten kids are at attention. She told me she calls it butts in the air. Okay. If you walk into that kindergarten classroom and the kids are really attentive, they're at a table of four and all the kids are leaning up and into whatever it is that's on the table. Even when that young child reads, it's like they almost come up and get into their book. You don't find five-year-olds at high focused attention with a butt in a chair. And how do you know that kindergarten kids are bored? They don't hide it. They'll put butts to the teacher. So the teacher's reading and they're crawling away in the opposite direction. Now, as kids move into the upper elementary grades, this gets more difficult because now the fakers set in, okay? You've all witnessed those fake readers. The book is there in front of them. Their head is moving side to side as if their eyes are sweeping across the page. But if you've been watching for 15 minutes, they haven't turned a page. I've gone up to some of those kids and said, honest, I can't believe how hard that is to fake read for 15 minutes. It's got to be easier to actually read than it is to fake read. And as kids develop their skills going through school, they get better and better at that, making the teacher's job even more difficult. And then the other one that I find extremely important with this is understanding that when you move into middle grades and into high school, it often isn't cool for a student to show that they have an anxiety or that they have a fear. And so often when those kids reach that left-hand side of this continuum, they will put on an act. And this gets risky because frequently what they do is act bored. So they'll actually act the opposite end of the continuum. Now, if you think about bringing that back to the teacher, what's the teacher's job and responsibility when you spot that kids are bored? The role of the teacher now is to increase the anxiety. In other words, bring something more challenging to the student to pull them up out of that bored spot. Now, go to the other end of the continuum. If I'm realizing that kids are at fear or that high anxiety, what's the job of the teacher? Well, the job of the teacher is to build in scaffolding to make it safer for the student to risk and be engaged in learning. So now catch what happens. I have a student who's at that fear or attention, but the student is acting as if they were on the other end of the continuum bored. And as a teacher, I may walk in, oh, so you're bored, and the teacher raises the anxiety. And next thing you know, we got a chair go flying or four-letter words get used. And a little while later, the teacher finds herself in the office with the principal saying, I don't know where that came from. And the truth is she doesn't, because the kid put on that good of an act. So I'm often sharing with those older students, when teachers first read that sign of being bored, before you jump in, take a step back and just do a double check that the student is actually bored and not putting on an act to cover up that fear or that anxiety. So as you look at the continuum here, fear, attention, comfort, bored, think about where on that continuum we find the ideal spot for student learning. I might describe it as, where do we get the maximum return? Where does the greatest amount of learning occur for the amount of time the student is investing in learning? And don't get stuck with just having to pick one of the four words, but consider anywhere on that continuum that you think might be that ideal spot for learning. And I want to suggest to you for the rest of this podcast that I want to play with the spot that's halfway between attention and fear. Okay? It's a high-focused attention spot. Now, I can't push it further towards fear, or I would get into that downward spiral caused by fight or flight. But it's pushing it beyond that attention to a high-focused attention. And I frequently like to label that spot as just-in-time learning. When you're engaged in learning and you know that in a very short amount of time, I have to take that learning and put it into use, it often brings you to that high-focused learning spot. Imagine that you're working on a graduate research paper. It's Saturday and your paper's due Monday. And a friend has stopped by to show you how to use a technology app that's going to run the data resources that you need to finish your paper. Most of you would be like that kindergartner, butts in the air. In other words, you're totally leaned into the work. Now, if you have too great of a concern about technology or the research part, the statistics part scares you, you could slide over to that fear spot and decide you'll be turning your paper in late or you'll be dropping the course. But if you're going to be successful, it's probably raised you just to that right spot of high focused attention. I'll share two examples with you that help me to understand that spot. One is, if you go to the gym with a trainer, the value of the trainer is that you're going to work out at the gym for 45 minutes, and the trainer is going to maximize the amount of those 45 minutes that you're at that sweet spot, gaining the most from your workout. Without the trainer, I'm on the treadmill, and I'm thinking to myself, it's time to stop. And that's when my trainer reaches over and hits the button and says, no, 3 more minutes at a higher speed. Okay. But equally true, my trainer will make sure that I don't overexert in the first 10 minutes of my workout and lose the value of the rest of my workout. So my trainer is maximizing my time there. Any of you who have done one-on-one tutoring with a student, you've captured this. Why is 30 minutes of one-on-one tutoring so powerful? Well, it's because you were able to keep the student at that sweet spot for almost all of the 30 minutes. Where if you think in a classroom when you're working with 25 students, it's hit and miss as to how often I can get a student to that sweet spot. Now, just like the trainer at the gym, I can't keep a student at that high focus spot the whole class, or they'll go too far to the left on me. So if you think about the trainer knows to push you, and then they pick a spot to slack off, let you slide back and start to catch your breath at coming up to comfort, but they won't let you go all the way to comfort. They know when to start pulling you back. So as a classroom teacher, that's the same thing I'm doing with my students. I push, I get the students up to that spot. I know I can hold them for a while. I read the students, and now I back off and bring them back down, but not to get too comfortable, and I bring them back up. So as teachers, we're always making choices to kind of move students around that spot. I recall a great example. I was watching a high school science teacher, and he presented a rather complex piece to the students. It was something like this. I need you to read through these next 3 pages, and I'm sorry, through these next 8 pages. And as you work through, it'll show you 3 different molecular structures. And so I need you to create a way of showing those structures to me at the end of the reading. And when you looked out at the students, you could see the white faces. You could almost hear the oxygen being sucked out of the room. The whole class had gone up to that fear or high anxiety. And he looked out at the students and he said, I guess it would be a good idea to do this in collaborative groups of 3 or 4. And you could just hear the pause as breath was coming back and the students were sliding back down to comfortable. But he looked out over the group and he must have decided that they got a little too comfortable, because then he quickly added, and at the end of 20 minutes, I'll randomly select one person from each group to present your response back to the whole class. And you could just feel that was pulling the students right back up to what he was seeing as that ideal spot. So we know how challenging this is, because as a teacher at the beginning of a class, you're looking out and chances are good you've got students all over that continuum. And that's where the whole differentiation process begins to set into play. How do I begin to modify a challenge out to the group? How do I begin to scaffold some kids, but not scaffold the whole class, with a goal of causing as many of my students as possible to hit that sweet spot? As you're observing your students, and you're thinking about where they are in the continuum, and you're seeking coaching from an instructional coach, your administrator, or your colleagues, or you're bringing this into a professional learning community, continually be thinking about what are the strategies we can use to bring an ever-increasing number of our students to that sweet spot. And the ultimate strategy is our ability to teach students how to use that sweet spot to maximize their own learning. How do we begin to teach students to know that my anxiety is going too high, and rather than shutting down, I need to be raising my hand to ask a question or turning to a colleague in class for support? How do I recognize as a student that I'm finding this task we're working on to be too simple and not challenging me so that I can step up to my teacher and ask a question that raises the learning a level? Or I ask my teacher what the next level would be. If you look at your strongest students, you'll be able to identify that one of the skill sets they have is the ability to control this. If they're in a class and they're feeling that the content is not successfully challenging them enough, they'll raise a hand and ask the teacher a question that just lifted this up. And we know that those high-performing students are highly skilled at knowing when to go to the teacher for support, when to turn to colleagues for support, when to jump online and see if they can find the support that they need. So consider actually showing your students what that sweet spot looks like and sounds like in learning at their developmental level. And think about pointing out for them what strategies exist for them to find the supports that will assist them in spending more time at that sweet spot and thus maximizing the learning that they're gaining from the time they're investing. Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.